Coming up on KUCB News, on Alaska's basketball teams are preparing for state, and Alaska Airlines does not fly the type of plane that recently crashed in Ethiopia, but the company is adding similar models to its fleet this summer. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, March 13th, 2019. In less than 24 hours, Unalaska's basketball teams will start their quests for the state championship. The Raider boys are entering the tournament as the top seed, and in the first round, they'll face Hooper Bay, a team that they beat last year 48-29.
Tournament plays. You got to take it one game and survive in advance without letting kids get thinking ahead.
That's Coach Riley Spetz. He says tough defense and rebounding will be key for his team.
We have some things that we need to do better defensively to make sure that we can compete at a high level. And, you know, we need to limit the other team's offensive boards and their chances at the basket. And, I think that's one thing we didn't do great this last weekend is the teams that we played got more chances at the basket than we did.
If the boys beat Hooper Bay, they'll face the winner of the matchup between defending state champion Metlakatla and Unalakleet. Meanwhile, the Raider girls are taking on the Nana, a team that defeated them in the state tournament last year, 71-47. Coach Casey Clausius says it'll be another tough contest against the Lynx, who look a lot like last year's squad, with the addition of reigning 2A player of the year, Sharon Hansen.
We're going to have to try to make our shots when they count, and we're going to have to play some good defense. And I told the girls, the bench girls as well, you're just as important here. And when you get your chance to get in there, you know, you play the best of your abilities and help all of each other out because we're all a team and we can't do it without you.
If Clausius's team advances, they'll face the winner of the matchup between Wrangell and Unalakleet. You can listen to both first-round state basketball games here on 89.7 FM. We'll bring you the live call tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock as the Raider boys take the court against Hooper Bay. The Raider girls play afterward, taking on the Nana at 11. And thanks to that basketball schedule, KUCB is skipping tomorrow's newscast to air the games. That means we're moving up this week's installment of our anniversary series to today. Unalaska Community Broadcasting has covered local news for the past 20 years. And to mark that milestone, KUCB is spending 2019 looking back at our former reporters and sharing some of their stories. This month, we're focusing on Ann Hillman. She filed this report in 2009 about a PETA campaign. We're re-airing this version that broadcast on NPR.
And finally today, and I swear this is no joke, sea kittens. That is the new term being used by People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, or PETA, for the creatures they believe are in dire need of an image makeover, fish. Here's PETA campaign coordinator Ashley Byrne.
PETA thought that by renaming fish sea kittens, that compassionate people who would never dream of hurting a dog or a cat might extend that sympathy to fish or sea kittens.
Byrne says so far the Sea Kittens campaign is getting a positive response. Reporter Ann Hillman of member station KUCB decided to go to an Alaskan fishing town to see how it's playing out there.
Ashley Byrne says that rebranding fish as sea kittens was obvious.
Fish not only have the same ability to feel pain as a dog or a cat, but they also communicate with one another. They have complex social interactions. They form bonds. They express affection by gently rubbing against one another.
The campaign boasts a colorful interactive website aimed at children and their parents. On the site, you can read sea kitten bedtime stories or design your own sea kitten pet. Byrne hopes this will build compassion in families.
Most parents would never dream of spending a weekend torturing kittens for fun with their families, but hooking a sea kitten through the mouth and dragging her out of the water is the same as hooking a kitten through the mouth and dragging her behind your car.
So far, PETA has only promoted the campaign in North Carolina, but they plan to take it nationwide, even to Alaska. It might be a tough sell in a state where fishing is not only many people's livelihoods, it's just kind of, you know, what you do. So I thought I'd preview the campaign in the small fishing town of Unalaska. First, I checked in with 12-year-old Chastity Haskins.
I don't see fish as sea kitten, I see him as food.
Chastity is looking at the campaign site with her friend, 11-year-old Harmony Wayner. So far, they're not so impressed.
Oh my God. It just doesn't look right.
Harmony is a fourth-generation commercial salmon fisherman. She looks at the cartoon fish and reads through the information on the site. It says sea kittens are intelligent. They feel pain.
They say that they're intelligent, but they're not really. They have tiny, tiny little brains. Tiny, very miniature.
She and Chastity also take issue with the claims that sea kittens are unhealthy to eat.
And they only talk about, like, farm fish. Mm-hmm. It's not, like, wild Alaskan, which is very good for you.
Most people I talked to agreed with the girls, which isn't that surprising. It is a fishing town.
I don't understand how it makes sense.
That's fisheries observer Mary Powers. Powers works on fishing boats, collecting data on the catches. She thinks the campaign, which encourages people to petition the Fish and Wildlife Service to stop the hunting of sea kittens, is misguided.
It seems like it's discouraging Americans to buy our product, which I think is, unpatriotic.
But PETA's Byrne says even if people lose jobs in the fishing industry through the success of the campaign, they could work in more sea kitten-friendly environments.
So as there is less of a demand for foods like fish, there's more of a demand for other foods, and jobs open up in those industries.
National Marine Fisheries Service Management Biologist Brian Dixon doesn't see the change coming anytime soon.
Well, it may raise some money for PETA, but I don't think it'll change the way that we manage the fisheries.
Or change the way he'll plan his meals.
I think I may eat some sea kittens tonight.
For NPR News, I'm Ann Hillman in Unalaska.
That was a 2009 story from Ann Hillman, the fourth reporter in the history of Unalaska Community Broadcasting. Join us each Thursday for the rest of the month when we'll be re-airing more of her stories as part of our year-long series celebrating the 20th anniversary of our local newsroom. You can also check out Hillman's most recent work at Alaska Public Media. A record number of Alaskans signed up yesterday to testify over the future of the state's ferry system. Governor Mike Dunleavy's budget proposal would eliminate the Marine Highway System after October 1st. But as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, people are pushing back.
They testified from all over.
My name is Joyce Frank, and this is my son, Kevin Frank Jr. We are here to speak for Angoon.
My name's Andrew Sword. I'm a commercial fisherman.
And they had just 1 minute to make their case to the House Transportation Committee. For people like Harvey Brandt and Sitka, the whole thing was rushed.
Figure out another way to run the ferry service, fine. But let's take 2 or 3 years to figure that out.
I'm going to have to ask you to sum it up, please.
Now in December. Thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
House Republican Louise Stutes of Kodiak often interrupted to keep things moving. That's because a record 283 people signed up to testify or listened in at legislative information offices around the state. A common refrain was that the ferries are the only link for communities. Wayne Carnes of Juneau said the Marine Highway is to Southeast what the Richardson Highway is to Anchorage, or the Parks Highway is to Fairbanks.
If our ferry system gets shut down, it basically means shutting down the equivalent of shutting down all those highways. And I'm more than willing to give up my PFD and even pay an income tax so we can fund essential government services.
Ferry employees also chimed in. Rob Arnold, a chief purser and a member of the Inland Boatmen's Union of the Pacific, said reform is necessary, but not the way the Dunleavy administration is doing it.
Labor is willing and able and honest and wants to find efficiencies in the system. Let's keep the system we have and fix it, and we don't have to keep spending money on all these consultants.
He's referring to the administration directing up to $90,000 towards hiring a marine consultant to look at privatization and other options to run ferry service next year. A request for proposals went out last week. Only one application came back. State officials say they are reviewing that sole proposal. An announcement is due on Monday, if not sooner. Critics of that process say hiring a new marine consultant disregards a regional effort underway for the past 2 years to remake the ferry system. Dennis Watson chairs that reform committee. He testified that he sees little good faith in the Dunleavy administration's efforts.
What I see in the cuts to AMHS and the governor's budget and the directive to hire a consultant to pick up the sticks afterwards is a directed effort to to curtail ferry service permanently.
The Senate Finance Committee has also been grappling with the ferry question. At the committee's request, budget officials have offered scenarios that would keep the service running through the next fiscal year, but at a much reduced level. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The House's Transportation Committee is scheduled to resume public testimony on the ferry system tomorrow afternoon at 1:30. Sunday's deadly plane crash in Ethiopia has focused international attention on a new Boeing airplane, one that is not yet in operation in Alaska. In both the Ethiopian tragedy and a similar incident in Indonesia in October, a recently delivered Boeing 737 MAX 8 aircraft crashed shortly after takeoff. In both cases, all passengers on board died. Experts are continuing to investigate the causes of both crashes, but meanwhile, many airlines and countries have grounded all 737 MAX 8s. As of today, that includes the United States, which had previously resisted calls to halt the planes that are currently flying for three U.S. companies. Southwest does not fly to Alaska, but American Airlines and United do, though they fly different versions of that plane. According to Boeing's website, the MAX 9 and 10 are slightly larger than the MAX 8, though all models have the same type of engine. Alaska Airlines does not currently operate any MAX aircraft, but it expects to add several to its fleet this summer. According to Alaska Vice President Marilyn Romano, the company expects its first MAX 9 delivery in June. A new Iditarod champion has been crowned. Bethel musher Pete Kaiser crossed beneath the Burled Arch in Nome at 3:39 this morning with a team of eight dogs. They ran the 1,000-mile race in 9 days, 12 hours, and 39 minutes. A boisterous crowd celebrated Kaiser's victory, which marks a new career highlight for the 31-year-old musher. He's raced the Iditarod every year since 2010 and on three separate occasions placed as high as fifth. But this is his first win, and he's also the first champion with Yupik roots. He says he hopes his victory sparks a wider interest in mushing.
Not just Yupik people, but all of the, you know, rural native people from Western Alaska or anywhere in the state for that matter. It really doesn't matter. Anybody who could get a kick out of this is, that's awesome, you know.
Kaiser had to hold off defending champion Your Life Seth Olsom, who surged on the final run in from White Mountain to trim 30 minutes off Kaiser's lead. The entire race came down to just 12 minutes. Kaiser's style tends to be conservative early on, banking extra rest to ensure he has speed when opportunities arise. It was that style that positioned him for victory this year.
I mean, I generally have kind of an idea of what I'm going to do, but it's never set in stone. It's just a lot of these runs, a run can take 5 hours on a good trail, 8 hours on a bad trail, just like this race played out. I mean, all these runs turned out to be 2 or 3 hours longer than they could have been on a good trail. So you got to be able to adjust your rest accordingly.
Kaiser lagged a bit behind the leaders for the early and middle sections of the race, preparing for the right time to show off his speed. It was on the approach to the Bering Sea coast and the final few hundred miles of trail that he made his move.
We just got some trail that the team really likes, and we didn't see much of that this race, so my team really likes hard, fast trails where they can go fast, and when they got on that, they really wanted to roar, and actually held them back for most of that run.
With his first place finish, Kaiser wins $50,000 and a new truck, in addition to his first Iditarod title. Norwegian Jor Olsom took second place with a team of eight dogs. Jesse Royer of Fairbanks pulled into third, some 6 hours behind them, with 11 dogs in harness. That marks her best finish in 16 years of Iditarod racing. There are still more than 30 mushers out on the trail now. We'll bring you more on their progress as the last great race continues. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.